is Cascadia Public Radio.
Genetics last week. I came home that night, and two stories were on my MSN notebook. One was designer babies, and the other one was the Octomom. Why we're so concerned about the Octomom. And of course, I don't know how many people have heard by applause that Obama has now lifted the ban on stem cell research. All about, yes, by applause. How many of you have heard that? A few of you. So, I mean, but he did make sure that there are no clones, okay? We're not going to clone anyone. It's because we don't want more people, you see? It's easy to make more people by doing this in vitro fertilization. You make more people by cloning. And cloning really isn't a bad thing because, I mean, I've done shows about cloning. I did a show a long time ago called Evil Clone Evil, where I talk about how every time you hear about a clone in science fiction, it's always an evil clone. It's never a nice clone. All clones are unstable and evil. Well, I mean, I think it'd be a twin right now because they are clones, really. They're natural clones. And so, you know, if you're afraid of cloning, if you're afraid of whether or not they're going to have a soul, just take a look at your twin brother or twin sister. And I don't think you'd be sitting there saying, I don't think my twin brother or twin sister have no souls. So I don't know why everybody has a fear of clones. I think cloning is interesting. Stem cell research is good, especially for people who have genetic problems, people who can't walk, people who need to have that kind of stuff done. However, universal health care will not cover the cloning, stem cell research procedure. So that's one of those things. Yes, we are lifting the ban on stem cells, but who's that going to benefit? It's going to benefit the rich. It's going to benefit those who have the money to pay for it. So, you know, it's kind of like nice, but you feel all good about it, but who's going to have the money to do that? Especially when you're out of work, you don't have insurance or health care. So, it's interesting to see how the stories are unfolding. We talked about the Ground Zero Lounge. Another story that came out, that Texas is looking for emergency assistance because of drought. California has also declared a state of emergency because of the drought. Brian Kennedy, who was here in the audience 3 weeks ago, it was 3 weeks ago, when we first talked about MK Agricultura, the first one we did, where we talked about how this is all a big psyop to get people worried about the food supply, that we have food poisoning and contamination going on. We have all kinds of things going on that make you wonder if the food supply is safe. So tonight, as promised, we are doing a follow-up to the show we did 2 weeks ago about food poisoning, food contamination. And I brought out a big gun tonight to come be on the show to talk about this. He couldn't make it last week. He's making it this week. We're going to call him to the stage now. We're going to hear from him in a little bit. Jeff Colley, who is the Vice President of Northwest Analytical. He's here tonight. Come on up here, Jeff. Give him a big hand. Jeff's going to sit right here. He's going to reserve a little bit. And then he's going to come up and talk to you a little bit about the good, the bad, and the ugly regarding food. And he will tell you a little bit about his background as well. why he is an expert on this, what happened when he was in Beijing, how he talked to people in Beijing about what's going on, and the complexities that exist in monitoring food and foodstuffs, and why it's so important that we keep and pay attention to this. Even you organic people who believe in organic eating and vegetarians, pay attention, because it's going to be a show where you have to really, really be selective with your foods. Tonight's show is, like I said, a follow-up to the last show when we talked about food. This one is called Mood Poisoning and the New Food Order. And I kind of borrowed the New Food Order from James and Eve Monarch. That was a brilliant way of putting it. In fact, I'm going to be on his show Friday the 13th. I'm also going to be on CW with Rick Emerson. I'm going to do a taping tomorrow at 8 a.m. So I'll be on that show as well. And just go to the websites and figure out. And another thing, too, big congratulations to Rick Emerson. He announced today that he's moving his show to KUFO FM. And Tim Riley is back as well, which I thought was great. I kind of felt bad. Yeah, Tim is back. So good for Rick. And we made the announcement nationally, Rick. So there you go. You can take that. Anyway, let's start off by doing a little bit of review. Last week, we revisited the new outcry for eugenics and genome 666, the subject of breeding and feeding, and how the Trilateral Commission was created partly to create a new international economic order. Its current statement has morphed into fostering a closer cooperation among these core democratic industrialized areas of the world with shared leadership responsibilities in the wider international system. The global plan for all countries is to live on the level of third world nations. Economic sustainability can be achieved through a process known as endgame strategies, and we talked about the endgame strategies, which include controls on ecological systems, also controls on your food, your water, the air, and I'm not kidding when I say air, it's weird. The agenda would severely limit water, electricity, and transportation, even deny human access to our most treasured wilderness areas. It would monitor all lands and people through tracking, scientific measures, biometrics, and of course, as we talked about last week, eugenics, which the directives are coming down, and you start seeing the processes take place with these genetic stories, and you're hearing about food stories. These are not by coincidence. These are happening by design. It's to keep you aware and on your toes about global sustainability. Global warming is what they call it. Global sustainability is the reality. Whether or not we can keep 6 to 9 billion people on this planet, whether or not we have to reduce the population in order to keep this planet sustainable. Now, if we have anything tonight, by the way, if you have anything you want to add to the conversation, we have two microphones, one over here and one over here. If you have anything to say, sometimes I can't hear you from the audience. I'd rather you come up to the microphones we talk about. If you want to debate with anyone, you can debate with them. Also, Jeff is here to answer any of your questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions, because this is a lot of stuff and a lot of heavy stuff that we cover. So keep that in mind. As we see food shortages happening in the world and concerns over hunger here in the United States, consumer confidence has dropped to 20%. And as food sources from pet food, infant formula, peanut butter have been contaminated with chemicals and bacteria, more and more people are losing confidence in the foods they eat. I mean, one thing like peanut butter is going to scare everyone, especially peanut butter that has been shipped out and basically kept bad for a longer period of time, and how people have gotten sick from eating it, and how a lot of people didn't know it was because they were eating contaminated food. We're going to see a decline in crops, as we mentioned, with the Arnold Schwarzenegger declaring a disaster area in California. Crops are going to be very expensive once we find out just what the drought is going to do to them. That's why Governor Schwarzenegger has declared an emergency. Not just that, but we got to also think about insect infiltrations. We need to think about money that is being used to transport these goods, and whether or not it's cost-effective to do so. You know, a lot of food can sit in rotten warehouses for long periods of time because no one can deliver it. And so we need to also take that into consideration, that there's going to be a lot of things happening. We remember a long time ago with Katrina, how ConAgra had a hard time moving their foods across the Mississippi after Katrina happened. A lot of those foods went bad, and we're starting to see a lot of economic slowdowns because of food shortages and food problems. We talked about this years ago. It's now happening. You hear the thunder in the distance, and you know the storm is coming, and this is why you're here at Ground Zero Lounge, to prepare you for this, so you are not sidetracked. You're not taken by surprise and say, I didn't know this was going to
come. What am I supposed to do? Well, you prepare. You start preparing with food. You start preparing with water. You start preparing with everything. It's growing your own, if you can. As long as they don't outlaw growing gardens, you're in a pretty good situation. As you can see in this article, it says world to face water shortages by 2025. You see, this article, once again, brings up the agenda of water. You know, when I was talking about food and water and air, these are the agendas that they want to frighten you over. There won't be enough water on the planet by 2025. Of course there won't be. Although the planet is two-thirds water. And I'm sure they can find ways. They're already finding ways to filter sewage. I don't understand how we can be so low. I mean, there are countries that are going to be facing water shortages because of where they're located. But of course, we've got Monsanto and other groups who will be able to truck in the water. And once again, as I said, those who have the guns control the food, control the water, control the weather and the air and everything else. Go ahead, Sarah.
I just want to clarify something because I once heard a radio host talk about how he couldn't understand how there could be a water shortage because the earth was like a big terrarium and the water doesn't go anywhere. He's right. The shortage is of clean water. And that's what Clyde's saying about filtering sewage and stuff, but you can only filter so long before what you're filtering through is just as dirty as what you're trying to filter through it. So there will be a shortage of clean water and a shortage of usable water in crops or anything else. And so just in case anyone's a purist and wants to say what the radio host said, that is the explanation.
Well, and I agree partly with that. I just know that the frightening part is that water, and when it is controlled and when it is sold, you'll be buying it from companies that that are controlling it, like Monsanto and several other companies. I mean, you've got companies like beer companies who shipped in water during the Katrina thing. I mean, Budweiser showed up with their water trucks and showed with beer, much to the unhappiness of some of the people there in the area of New Orleans, but they showed up with water because clean water is hard to come by in certain emergencies and disasters, and those are some things that, you know, of course, they want to control, and they will control it if you're not prepared. If you have your own water, you'll be fine. Barack Obama has said that times of crisis should bring about new and great opportunities. We have been able to determine that this is a classic Hegelian model of problem-reaction-solution, all the things that we're talking about. You have a problem, you try to get a reaction from the people, and then they come up with a solution. It's kind of like a forced card. You say, well, this is a solution. Why don't we start sending the water in from Monsanto? Why don't we start sending in the water from all these other companies? We'll pay higher taxes. We'll do all these things to protect us from the horrible, horrible shortages of food and water when self-sustainability is just as important as global sustainability. Okay? We talk about how we're going to save the planet. Why don't we talk about how we're individually going to save ourselves? I mean, I was talking with my girlfriend just the other day about recycling. And yes, I do believe that we should do our part to have some sustainability. We should do our part to try and conserve a lot of things. However, I wish that they would not sit there and lie to us about things like climate change and other science, pseudoscience, and scaring us into believing that we're all going to die, we're all going to have these problems, because I kind of believe along the lines of Michael Crichton before he passed away, when he wrote that book where he said that if you tell a civilization, if you're in a power and authority, you tell a civilization it's going to die, chances are it's going to die. And for the longest time, when Chernobyl happened, they were saying that several people were all going to die, 500,000 people were all going to die, doom, gloom, doom, gloom, doom, gloom. And the doom and gloom didn't happen as bad as they said it would. However, they projected the worst, and then people saw the reality. Well, a lot of times we do project the worst. Then the reality happens and we say, well, we can deal with that because it's happening slowly. That's why I always tell people, even though I talk about some of these things, I always tell you, you're going to die a boring death, most of you. Wars have happened. Rumors of wars have happened. We've gone through several world wars, even a nuclear explosion in Japan, and still to this day, people are dying natural and boring deaths. I don't know if we're ever going to see a day when an asteroid's going to hit the planet, although we did have a close call about 40,000 miles just last week. But in the meantime, we have to keep living, and we have to live good, and we have to plan. We plan for those things, and we hope for the best. That's what needs to go on. And so like Obama says, in times of crisis, we can come up with great opportunities. Many crises are turning up everywhere.
and they attack our resources. Sometimes they even attack our mental resources. They've been exploited with heightened fear levels. How many people have heard these fear levels on television and say, oh my God, what am I going to do? By applause. How many people have heard the fear levels? Nobody's heard them? They're everywhere. They tell you, the money is going to be gone. This is going to be gone. That's going to be gone. And a lot of people, they don't care. A lot of people don't care because they think it's not going to hit the United States as hard as what's been projected. And a lot of people have downplayed it and made fun of it. This is why it's important to pay attention to it and know what can happen and know what may happen. Go ahead, Alex. Alex, to answer, ladies and gentlemen, from outside the box, give him a hand, too. That's a great show. I apologize for that. Go ahead, Alex.
Great topic tonight, Clyde. I just want to try to make this short, under a minute. I just want to make an announcement, and it kind of dovetails with what you're saying about food quality and food safety. Real briefly, there's going to be some naval war game drills. They're going to be kicking off the coast of Oregon, California, Idaho, and Washington, and it's... I'll get to how it's going to affect the food in just a minute. People haven't really been told about the environmental impact of it. Through fear, Clyde, they're saying they have to shell out in the ocean, increase missiles fired by 470%. They're also talking about things like the potential of depleted uranium being used, white and red phosphorus, and this is Navy jurisdiction over land, sea, and air. So it actually has a land jurisdiction extending all the way to Idaho, including the state of Idaho. The food element, Clyde, pertains to the use of sonar. All the salmon that are going to die through fear, saying we need to test and expand sonar and things of that nature. So this is a big, big issue. I just want to mention real quick, if someone does want to call the local representative, I'm not saying it's going to change anything, but 3/11/09, coming up in a couple of days, that's it. Then there is no particular end date after that, after the public has a chance to comment. But Clyde had been real quiet about it. The Navy just, print a couple of small little things. So I just want to make sure people are aware of that. And you're going to see more MH6 choppers in Portland because that was run by the Navy.
Exactly. Yeah, very good. There's going to be more black helicopters in Portland, just want to let you know. And also, there's been troop movement seen all over the area. Beaverton just had some troop movement the other day. They were loading tanks and all kinds of other equipment onto the trains out there in Beaverton. It was funny, I got a text that was going on. I had a friend of mine who drives a cab who was stuck behind it, and he said it was very, very weird. And a lot of those people say, oh, don't mind it. They're just doing, the National Guard's doing some sort of a drill. Well, one of the guys asked the question, what are you guys doing? It says, we are here to deploy and then to go. So they were there doing a drill for some reason. So National Guard, military, whatever, it's always odd to see these things going on in a city, especially during, quote, peacetime here in the United States. Over there is where we see a lot of that, but here you don't see it, and it's really weird the way this is going on. They're preparing for something. We're preparing for something, whether it be food, economic, money, or whatever we're preparing for. We need to be aware that this is happening. One would think that with all the money, with all the trillions of dollars the U.S. government spends, the least it could do is protect America's food supply. And regulatory agencies in charge of inspecting food manufacturers have been so weakened over the past 8 years that much of the work has been left to private inspection agencies hired by the food companies themselves. Some of them don't even have visits from the food inspectors for long periods of time, so they have superior ratings that last years and years and years. With profit as the bottom line, the quality of these inspections leaves a lot to be desired. The most recent food safety catastrophe deals with the contamination of peanut products from the Blakely, Georgia plant of the Peanut Corporation of America. We're going to talk more about that with Jeff in just a minute. We're going to hear more about what happened with that and why it's so bad. In a March 27, 2008 report by the American Institute of Baking, the food safety level at the plant was rated superior. In fact, the plant was highly tainted with salmonella, and the Peanut Corporation of America had been shipping poisoned peanut products during that time. Those poisoned peanut products were in the marketplace for at least a year, maybe more, before they were even detected as being poisonous or full of salmonella bacteria. So this is how it runs in corporate America. They were shipping the poison peanut products, and by the time federal investigators finally caught up with the problem, 9 people were thought to have died, and an estimated 22,500 were made sick by the salmonella poisoning from the peanut companies of America. In another particularly grotesque example as well, the Weston Hallmark Meat Company of Chino, California, managed to pass 17 separate audits in 2007
despite the fact that they were forcing the beef cows into their slaughterhouses. The scandal was not revealed until an undercover investigator who obtained work at the Westland facility released a video of the illegal activities, and some of the meat was being sent to the National School Lunch Programs. Now, Jeff is going to have something to say about that, as well as going to give you the facts behind that and what happened. And this, you'll find out, is a form of terrorism. And we'll give you, we're not going to say it's terrorism in the Islamic Muslim sense, or in the way, as George Bush says, this isn't the terrorism we're looking for, but it was terrorism the way it was exploited and given fear. The last report we did about the subject of food is a weapon covering the possibility of terrorism being carried out by contaminating food. With the globalization of agribusiness, it would not be out of the question to see some of the foods coming from other countries on our dinner tables. We see Spain now has reported the fifth human death because of Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, or mad cow disease. This is where you eat this, and you eat meat, and you get this from the meat, from the cows. And that's happened. In fact, my grandmother died of that. So, and it was not reported by the health department. They were afraid of getting out from the crisis. But if you look at our death certificate, it does say bovine sponge form encephalopathy, and yes, she did get it from Europe. That's where she was when she contracted it. The list of potential unconventional weapons and methods of simple terrorism has been published by alphabet agencies ad infinitum, but the new terror threats are to the food and water. They're also being carried out, and they're being called unconventional ways to create terror. Unconventional ways to get the economy to fall apart. Unconventional ways to see people lose confidence in what they buy. Stimulus packages can come and go, but if people don't want to get off their asses and buy anything, we are going to see a slowdown of the economy. And if people lose confidence in the food they eat, that's one of the main things people buy, is food. And if they can't buy food with confidence, then we have a bigger problem altogether. And so they have to, you know, come up with new ways to take care of the terror that people have, to change it. Water and food supply terror models are the most complicated and the hardest to solve because food contamination sources and methods. Are you, what, oh, okay, I guess they're applauding that. Okay. Yeah, the diarrhea, the diarrhea, the color code, brown, yellow, puke, Pepto-Bismol, lavender, I don't know. Anyway, water and food supply terror models are the most complicated and the hardest to solve because food contamination sources and methods appear to be naturally occurring. Bacterial and chemical contaminants have happened regularly in food supplies. It happens all the time, and that's why it's hard to track it. It's hard to find the genealogy of the food or to go back. So that's why they call it an unconventional way of terror. It's also the old school way of terror. You remember we talked about the Palestinian situation back in 1978, where Palestinians had claimed that they injected Israeli oranges and citrus fruits with mercury, making people sick and making little children sick. So yeah, you want to say something about that?
That's how they killed one of his eyes.
Really?
They injected chocolate with a bacteria. They killed him in 1977 after the OPEC thing.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Oh, thank you for that. Give him a hand. I didn't know that. That's interesting. I mean, injecting chocolate. We talked about the Ukrainian president who also had dioxin put in his food. Go ahead.
And a small fact, 31% of the foods they tested at like a place like Safeway or Fred Meyer, the stuff that includes high fructose corn syrup, 31% of it contains traces of mercury. New study.
Oh, I heard about that. I didn't, you know, I didn't want to talk about that. I haven't even gotten around to it.
It's a European study or a different study that said 45%. So there's one that says 25 and one that says 31.
Right, okay. So mercury content in high fructose corn syrup, that's not good because a lot of people feed their kids high fructose corn syrup, and when it has that kind of mercury in there, it can really be a horrible thing. The Rajneesh bioterror attack, how many people remember that? You're all from Oregon, right? Yeah. Bottom one, Rajneesh. They went and they contaminated salad bars in the Dalles, and they had about 750 people that were infected by it. This was the first bioterror attack in the United States. And it was one of two, actually. I think the other one was the Tylenol scare, and we just had the 25th anniversary of that just recently, and they had a suspect. Apparently they went after. I find that very coincidental, by the way. They were the 25th anniversary of the Tylenol scare, and now we're having all these scares about contaminants in food. The attack is one of only two confirmed terrorist cases in the United States using food supplies, and they were trying to do it to get people to change an election. One of the latest stories that I just uncovered, or that I just found in the news, in fact, I found it on the internet long before I found it in the newspaper, was in the, I think the Saturday Oregonian, talked about the fat duck. which is a very, very prominent and important restaurant in the UK. And apparently, the guy who runs the place, his name is Blumenthal, said, I don't know how this is happening because we run one of the cleanest operations in the UK, and 400 people were poisoned. 400 people were poisoned by the food or by something that was being served with the fat duck. Go ahead.
Industry started commercials on how it's safe and equivalent to sugar. And those commercials have been playing with more and more rapidity lately.
Super Bowl commercials.
Oh, yeah. Super Bowl. I just saw a new one the other day on
TV. Were using sex.
Go ahead and get on this microphone, Alex. No. Okay, now. Go ahead and stay there. Stay there while we're talking. Hold on. Wait, no, what are you saying?
So I was just going to describe the commercial.
Right.
So the woman and the man are speaking, and he's saying to his girlfriend, I thought you loved me. What do you mean when you're offering me a high fructose corn syrup lollipop? And it's red, symbolizing sex, shaped like a penis. And she's like, oh, silly. What do you have? And she kind of flips the red lollipop in his direction.
Right.
Like, I guess I don't have any sex. Oh, I didn't think so. Fructose syrup. It's great for your whole family. End of commercial. Back to the game.
What's that?
It's also the one with the two mothers, like at the soccer game.
Yes, the
and
two mothers.
And the mom's talking about that bad for my child? And the other mother
goes,
why no? It's just as good as sugar. And the equivalent of, you know, calories and
enough mercury to make you, like, rise up in a hot
temperature. The whole thing is a
little
horrifying.
Anyway, Clyde, that came out a couple days after that mercury report I just mentioned came out. So first the report came out with the facts, and then
the commercials. To save face. Yeah. Oh, good. PR works, doesn't it? Go ahead.
Yeah, one more thing about the juice, like Ocean Spray juice, it's so hard to differentiate between 100% juice to the cocktail, which I've just answered it. They're almost identical. I mean, like, you could just pull off the shelf and think you're buying one thing and you bought the other thing.
Right.
So they, you know, it's very tricky.
Also, another thing I find interesting, and I hope I had nothing to do with it, there was actually a scare that went on where somebody had mixed chlorine with acid, creating a vapor fume in some hospital, I think it was in Denver. So some guy was taking notes at the Ground Zero lunch, but we still talk about food as a weapon. So I hope it wasn't him doing that. It's just an accident, I guess. Regardless of your definition of terrorism, food tampering is terrorism without political purposes. It's usually done to weaken economic progress and to sabotage products in order to restrict consumer confidence. It's hard to track any food contamination to organized terrorism because of the conspiracy of silence. Since our last report on food tampering and the economy, consumer confidence has dropped, foodstuffs are now under scrutiny, and the FDA and the Obama administration are being pressured to pay out more money for food security. The only thing that's bad about that is that when the FDA gets money, do they put it towards food? No, they put it towards drug testing. That's more important. A lot less money is spent on food testing and things of that nature, and they basically want to get you the best drugs, because of course, drugs clear up salmonella and anyway, enough of my talking. What I want to do now is I want to introduce to you Jeff Colley. He is the Vice President of Northwest Analytical Incorporated. He's presenting information that has demonstrated that food safety and quality requirements are now more complex and require sophisticated risk analysis and data analytics reporting. He recently spoke in Beijing about food safety and quality management. He's here tonight to report about food poisoning and the new food order. Please give a big welcome and a round of applause for Jeff Colley.
Well, thank you, Clyde, and thank you for you folks. This is actually sort of an interesting experiment on my part. I normally speak to industry and governmental audiences, and a lot of the stuff that I'm trying to talk about, I like to get to the general public, and as we'll be talking about, it's sometimes not easy. I was going to start sort of a George Carlin-style rap when he was mentioning all the alphabet soup. I have been a member of the ACS, the ISA, the IAWP, and the chairman of the IFTQAD, but I didn't have time to practice it like Carlin did. Anyway, if we could go to the first slide, Clyde. What are we talking about tonight, the food safety issues? Number one is the good. We're going to be looking at some examples, plus also of what is working and what people are making work, And also we'll have a little bit of video of a TV program I was involved in last year on safety in the food supply chain. But then we're going to talk about the bed. And these are the problems. There's our favorite friend, Stuart Parnell of Pena Corp of America, delightful chap. I'll talk with a bunch of them about him shortly. And then the ugly. This is the terrorism thing that Clyde has been talking about. Now, I will agree with him that the real danger of food-related terrorism is not so much that you are poisoning a lot of people, but you are destroying confidence. And actually, one of the cases I will talk about was the Hallmark Westland case, where it wasn't a food safety problem, but it was presented as such. And also the realities of dealing with the concern for terrorist attacks. And believe me, government and industry right now is very concerned about it. We have the bioterrorism regulations, the whole industry of track and trace type of software is a growing one. Several of my colleagues are making good money at it. I'm trying to figure out how to get part of that. But the issue is that it is a real concern. We need to guard about it. However, I contend these guys are real amateurs compared to category number two, the bad players, which are the real problem. Let's go to the next one. Okay, food safety. Like I say, we're going to be talking about what's working and what people are trying to do. Secondly, what's not? The gaming of the system. That's the Stuart Parnells of the world. That's the folks like San Lu Dairy in China and so forth. And where does terrorism fit? And then finally, the particular cross that I keep bearing around is the story you get dealing with the narrative in the media. And this is a very real problem that has been alluded to in a lot of the examples that people are discussing here. Is that the information is not clearly and accurately presented. They like to have a simple narrative, and they don't want to discuss the important details and the realities with folks. Okay, we can go to the next one. Now, food safety, there's a huge international effort, and I'm happy to say that I am part of that, of developing the food safety support systems. That means the food that gets to your table is safe. And I will say that probably at no point in human history has there been a higher level of food safety in the supply chain. And when you consider the massive amount of food that moves over tremendous distances to huge numbers of people, that's a pretty defensible statement. Let's look at some of the things. Number one, you may have heard the term HACCP. That's an acronym. We love acronyms. That stands for Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Points. This is something that grew up, started with the space program. NASA contracted with Pillsbury to develop a food safety program for the early space program. Nothing's worse than having an astronaut puking or working over his diapers in a Mercury capsule. This is very inconvenient and it threatens missions. Since then, it has matured to become pretty much the science-based way that we guarantee food safety within organizations. I'm not going to go into great detail about it right now. If you want to ask questions, I'll be happy to elaborate upon it. Secondly is the whole concept of food safety management systems. This is an area that I'm particularly involved with. There's a codification of this with the ISO standard 22000, which one of my colleagues has set up the U.S. delegation to ISO on that. Very important advances there. So the whole concept of supply chain management is critical here. As you may have gathered from many of the items being discussed, the problem is not so much just the food processor in a given location, it's the fact that their ingredients and raw materials are globally sourced. And without a properly disciplined system in place, you have no idea where this material is coming from, how it was produced, how it was handled in transit, and how it was finally delivered to the product. Again, we will discuss that further. And then finally is the Global Food Safety Initiative. This is a effort. There are now four recognized audit schemes that are used worldwide, and you'll find your major food retailers are heavily buying into this. Last year, Walmart here in the United States issued the requirement that as of this year, all of their vendors are going to have an auditable food safety system to deliver to them. Likewise, in Europe, you have firms like Tesco and Carrefour's. You may not know them here, although they do own many American supermarket chains as part of the globalization of resources. But you will find them all around the world. And if you think that a big Fred Meyer's or Safeway is large here, wait until you've walked into a Carrefour's or an Ahold. The Europeans do love mega marts. The Carrefour's, I bought some stuff in Beijing, was amazing. I mean, there is no store in Portland anywhere near that big. And it's interesting. So all of these folks have bought into this system, as deep as major food producers such as Nestle, Unilever, etc. And they're well-designed systems, and there's been a huge amount of effort by professionals, by governments, and by the industry to set up food safety systems. So these are comforting things. Let's go on to the next one. And just to go through what should happen in a vendor certification program. Number one, you have to specify what it is you want to buy. What's the product and what's the process that makes it? And then you have to certify that that vendor is capable of doing it. And that requires on-site audits, their history, and some real analytical data about it. Then you need audits to make sure they're still doing it. And then all the time that they keep producing and delivering stuff to you, reports on the status of their process, what was actually making that, the process that made the product, and what got finally delivered to you. One thing I love about the Peanut Corp of America case that was mentioned, I've been writing some papers on this, if you do a checklist of all of these items and what should go in to delivering food safety to your plate, Peanut Corp of America violated each and every one of those checklists. So they are definitely in my blacklist and definitely show us what should not be done. Next slide, please. Now, one example of a job being done right is with the USDA's Ag Marketing Service and the National School Lunch Program. The specification that was developed by a colleague of mine, Steve Olson, for the purchase of ground beef for the school lunch program is a beautiful example of doing this right. And next slide is fine, put that up. And you can see one example of it. Since the 2003 contract year, when they first started this, they have reduced the occurrence of salmonella in the raw material from over 5% to now, and that's up 7 is the last data I have plotted here, but it's even lower now. It's hovering around 1%. That's probably the limit of the natural system and how low you're going to get the salmonella in the raw material. Remember, when we talk about these various bugs, they are part of the natural system. There's no way in the world you're going to get away with dealing with poultry without salmonella. There's no way in the world you're going to get together with beef without dealing with salmonella or E. coli or whatever. The game is, how do we reduce it to low enough levels that we can all tolerate it and not get sick? Now, in the case of the school lunch program, as I mentioned, they designed a very good program. I had a rather fun experience last year of being involved with a television program in the Feast or Famine series. This is produced by a group. It's one of the many that produces TV programs to feed the Great Wall of cable and satellite broadcast. And it was on food safety and the supply chain. And we used the example of the National School Lunch Program to show how this was done. These are some interior shots of Cherry Meats in South Chicago. I mean, these guys, this is old school place. I'm going to have a little video clip of this before we go on much further description. But this is owned by the Pulsa brothers, who are third generation Lithuanian meat processors in South Chicago. And it's sort of a neat environment. Can we bring that video up?
Sure.
Let's see if we can do that. Then I'll probably comment a bit over it, and then we'll go into further what it's about.
Best quality ground beef for school kids.
quality and value go hand in hand. And the quality has to meet the needs of our customers. And our customers, we feel, are in school.
We visit Cherry Meats in Chicago to discover how food safety and food wholesomeness are ensured through every step of the food chain. Cherry Meats is a major supplier to the school lunch program.
The company actually started, was started by my grandfather during the Depression. He had a horse and buggy, and he sold meats off the horse and buggy to people on the street. Our products generally are for school systems and for food service use. We make hamburger patties, we make sausage items, and we also make products that go for retailers. We demand that we bring in the best product we can get. And we've got a great partnership with a couple of beef suppliers, and we do stay strictly within those companies. In other words, we don't go on the outside, we try to get the cheapest product we can. We customize our suppliers into training them what we need. They make it for us the way we need it, and then we just maintain that quality throughout the process.
The quality and safety of the meat here does not rely solely on inspection.
All of the inspection of final product usually brings a false sense of security. We don't normally test enough product to be able to make a decision on what is happening with a specific loss.
Dr. John Surak, food safety consultant at Surak Associates in Princeton, South Carolina, says that food safety cannot be inspected into a product. And end product testing is costly, time-consuming, and not reliable.
Our inspection systems, which were very good and have always been very good, always focus on product inspection, product control. So the biggest change, and that was important to the ground beef program, is that we learned to get complying product had to come from a process that complied. In other words, you cannot inspect product to comply. It has to be produced to comply. So that's where we're changed now to go to more of a process control.
They use supply chain management.
Supply chains, of course, are the whole linkage from the beginning of your raw material production through the process to the final delivery to the end customer. The idea of a supply chain management system is you're managing not only the logistics, the flow of the material throughout the system, but also, is the material as it moves from one point to the other the right material in the right condition so the next part of the process can properly handle it? Supply chain quality management is a very important contributor to providing safe food. If you have your process well known, identified, and under control, you create a situation where you're very, very unlikely to create contaminated product.
Sealed tubs of boneless beef arrive at the Cherry Meats loading dock in refrigerated trucks. The meat comes from a packing house that has been chosen carefully to meet Cherry Meats requirements. In fact, they have built a vendor-customer relationship together to be sure that all meat entering the processing system is always at the standards that Cherry wants for its school lunch customer.
It is important that the boneless beef coming into the operation be of acceptable quality, and that as it goes through their operation, they know what is happening as far as cleanliness and pathogen levels, and that they are not introducing any problems, and that the final product, as it goes into the patty or to the ground coarse ground beef package, is of a good quality. Low pathogens, the right level of fats, etc.
The boneless beef is lifted into a grinder. One beef product is coarse ground, which will be turned into 1 pound and 10 pound chucks, ground beef that can be used for any number of food dishes, such as lasagna, meatballs, chili, and meat sauces. A more final ground beef will be made into hamburgers.
The main thing that we want to monitor and maintain is temperature. Not only of the product, but the coolers that it's stored in, and the time that it's stored in that cooler. If we can keep anything 40 degrees or less, we're going to minimize any kind of bacterial growth. We have a lot of long-time employees. When we do hire, we do put them through food safety handling instruction. For the first week, they're watched very closely to make sure that we follow all the rules and regulations that we set, in addition to meat inspection and EMS. Hair nets, beard nets, gloves, sanitary gloves, removing of all garments once they leave the production area, washing their hands when they re-enter, putting new gloves on once they enter. All this is very, very important. What we try to do is eliminate as much of the handling of the product as we can. Over the years, we've mechanized to such an extent where our caddy operation, for example, once the caddies are formed, they are never touched. They go through the freezing process, the packaging process, the bagging process, the boxing process, without ever being touched by human hands.
Nobody identified what are the potential hazards in a food product. Then we designed control procedures to control those hazards, either by preventing their incorporation into the food product or by eliminating the processing steps. And we implement those control procedures and we verify that the system is working day in, day out.
Both the USDA and the FDA use HACCP standards for food. That means hazard analysis and critical control points. This has been strengthened with the ISO 22000 Food Safety Management System.
Those of us who worked on ISO 22000, we made a commitment to revise that standard every 5 years. And the object is to bring all these new technologies and to strive into the standard so it can be used by food processors, by trainees, for food safety.
We do what's known as an on-site capability assessment, where an auditor will actually come out and essentially it's the old saying, do what you say and say what you do. And if you wrote down saying you're going to do everything, we merely check out to make sure you actually do it.
Through a various steps through the process, samples are taken into the lab to be tested for fat content and other factors so that adjustments to the process can be made right away. This data is entered on control charts, so the manufacturer and the USDA can quickly spot variances from ideal standards and quickly make corrections if necessary.
The main tools that we use now are SPC tools, statistical process control. And what we do is we try to take all that data that we collect throughout the day, whether it's for metal detection, portion size, muscle microbial counts. And what we do is try to take all that data and put into some type of statistical database, which we now use Northwest Analytical.
Okay. Supply tells me we are running late on time. God, they don't make TV like that every day. So much better than Angry Housewives. But that's my own subtle comment. You didn't get to see my last bits of line to it. But the point is, that program works, and it works incredibly well. Since the 2003 contract year, they've handled over 300 million pounds of ground beef each and every year and have yet to have a salmonella or E. coli occurrence in that product that's delivered. It can be done, ladies and gentlemen. They've demonstrated. Now let us look to the bad. This is where a lot of the problem is in the game. They're gaming the system. We're going to look very briefly at both the melamine adulteration case and the Phoenix Corp of America. My favorite friend, Stuart Brunell. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, for those of you who forgot your high school organic chemistry, that is melamine. And the reason why that has gotten in the news the last few years, it's a cheap, easy way to boost the apparent protein content of a food product. Now, what they're looking for when they do a general assay of protein is nitrogen. Look at that molecule. It's got a ton of nitrogen in it. For every pound of melamine you add to a product, it looks like you put 4.5 pounds of protein in. That's much cheaper than actually getting protein. Oh, we move a little faster. I was going to say. Oh, okay. That's the form you normally see melamine in. your melamine dishes, especially for those of you who like mid-century classic dishes. But next little bit there, this is the form your adulterant season. A nice bag of melamine, this coming from the Tijang International Trading Company Limited. Why would they want to use melamine besides boosting protein? Great. It's the perfect thing for adulteration, or even Taurus. It is odorless. It is tasteless. It's a white powder. The acute toxicity of it is about the same of table salt, 3 grams per kilogram. What's that mean? Somebody who eats something laced with melamine isn't going to drop dead right away. However, both in the cases of menu foods and when they bought the wheat gluten and proteins from China, and then in the case of the formula poisoning in adulteration in China, when you have small organisms, babies, dogs, kitty cats, who are eating one big primary food source, kitty chow, dog chow, baby formula, it's going to hit you hard and cause irreparable kidney damage. A little anecdote, Clyde mentioned I was speaking in China in the fall. I was at the China International Food Safety Quality Conference, one of the speakers there. And it was great timing. The Sunday before the conference started, the whole melamine thing broke in Beijing. And actually, as I landed Monday afternoon and was unpacking in the hotel, I happened to flip on the TV to CCTV 9, which is the government's English language channel. And what were they showing? The day before in Beijing, they had had a government hearing about the melamine poisoning of the baby formula. And here you had executives from some of the dairy firms like Sanlu, et cetera. And they were just espousing virtues that would make a neocon businessman's heart warm. Oh, you don't understand. I mean, it's so hard to make a profit these days. There's competition. The costs are rising. What is a poor businessman to do? And that plastic baggie gives you the answer. People gaming the system. They figure they can slip under it, make a profit, and then move forward. Next slide, please. We're trying to get time here. This is our friend Peanut Quark of America and Stuart Parnell. I do hope they find negligent homicide for this individual, but you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't say. Everything that they did in this case was wrong. As you may have read, over the period of about 14, 15 months, they had 12 positive assays for salmonella in the peanut butter. What did they do? One of the things as an athlete or person like that, they shopped the assays. They kept taking samples to different labs until somebody came back with a negative one. That is gross negligence. That's also the kind of thing the school lunch program supply chain system that I mentioned to you has a way around, where you have fixed agencies reporting on, or contractors fixed, reporting on fixed intervals. You can't shop your assays that way. This individual, if you read the reports, and if you want a real horror story, on the FDA.gov site is the actual 483 document, which is an inspector's document, 9-10 written pages of all of the problems that they had at that Lakeview, Georgia plant. 9 handwritten pages. And John Surak, one of the people you saw in that little film clip, knows the guy, and apparently he didn't enter a lot of the stuff that had gotten duplicated too many times. Hideous. This man is trying to game the system. That was the whole point. Ship product, we can't afford to keep it around. These guys are your real food safety consideration, and they're one reason why the average terrorist is going to have a fly beneath the radar. They're amateurs compared to characters like him. Let's go on to the next. The ugly. Terrorism. Small, discrete events. The goal, as Clyde has mentioned, destroy confidence in the economy. And there's a lot of defenses in the place, but there are holes. One of the biggest things, Clyde mentioned the Westland Hallmark case, is actually misinformation campaigns that are given for... What's that's the peanut corp thing? Yeah, there we go. This was in USA Today after the initial part of the Humane Society of the U.S. Videos came out. A little bit of clarity. The Humane Society of the U.S. is not related to your animal shelter. They're basically a companion group to PETA against industrial farming, against meat consumption. I don't really have a problem with that. I do have a problem with a lot of their tactics. The problem that Hallmark Westland had was they violated the ultimate rule. Thou shalt not embarrass your regulator. And when the videos that the HSUS guys they show up on Good Morning America, you have violated that rule. Typically, in that same year, there were 87 other cases of inhumane treatment of cattle in slaughter yards. What happens? The regulatory guys go in, they say you're closed down so you can correct this, demonstrate you've put procedures in place and oversight, and then we get back in operation and we watch the hell out of it. That didn't happen here. Now, the FSI, that's the Food Safety Inspection Service, who's responsible for the meat, overreacted. And this massive recall of 143 million pounds of hamburger. You'll notice, if you read the text there, however, this is a Class 3 recall. It's not an issue of food safety. It's an issue of violating procedure. There's a lot in the procedures for the way the meat is handled, what tissues are allowed to ground beef that will prevent DSE and similar type of problems. There are also the animals that they were being concerned were being mistreated. Steve and Sam Mandel fell down. They had a wonderful ground beef operation in Westland. When they bought the Hallmark slaughter yard, the guys, as often as said, were not cowboys, and they did not manage it properly. So they got what they deserved, but it was not a food safety problem. However, the narrative that you saw, like in this article and all the others coming out, presented it as a big one. National School Lunch Program was used as the headliner because that gets the kiddies and concerns. Actually, most of this meat is going to Costco, In-N-Out Burger, and Jack in the Box. The situation here is a classic case, though, of how an organization that wants to create confusion and fear can do so by controlling the narrative. Now, one of the authors of this newspaper article called me up, because we have a lot of stuff on our website about the National School Lunch Program. And indeed, we sold a little software for the grinding operation. And she wanted to know all about it, and I told her what I knew. I knew nothing about the slaughter, never having dealt with that corporation. But sent her a whole lot of information, some of which you saw a little bit of here. Interestingly enough, that never showed up in print. Either people don't want to talk about it. It's a little more complex. It's not as headline-grabbing. And that is part of the problem, is the narrative in the press. Okay, let me just click on here. A little side note of this, Pravda did the same kind of headlines and then stole some of the text I'd written in an essay that, of course, completely contradicted the headlines. Okay, Pravda, I can get around that. They're not respectable journalism. The Wall Street Journal did the same thing 2 weeks later. And again, glaring headline, the text of it refutes it. Okay, I can't quite go to everything, but any questions or whatever, I'll be happy to talk.
Any questions?
I was wondering about the school lunch program. So that meat would be better than the meat we get at our supermarkets as far as a lesser risk of salmonella versus like 1% versus 5% risk chance?
Oh, that 1%, that isn't what was delivered. That's in the raw material. So part of the prerequisite conditions was cleaning up the animal handling and the sanitation and the slaughter process. Actually, they have never delivered a lot of food that has above critical levels of salmonella or E. coli, period. Yes, actually, that 143 million pounds, I've seen the analytical data and the bacteriological data on it. Yeah, it's better than typically what you get in the supermarket.
What
What would be the percentage of salmonella in beef in the supermarket you would expect?
That's hard to say. It can be all over the map depending upon. It's actually, with coming from reputable sources, it's fairly low. There's a lot of regulation in this stuff. There is much more danger in meat and poultry in what happens from the supermarket to your kitchen counter.
What about, and to get into the supermarket, like I'm thinking about transporting meat to the supermarket as far as in the economy. If the economy goes down, the truckers can't get to supermarkets in time, does that increase the risk of salmonella?
It could. You know, a lot of that depends upon what people do. If they do what they're supposed to do, no. We all know what that can happen in times of stress, especially economic stress. People tend to take short cuts. Hopefully you're not as bad as Stuart Parnell or the San Luis executives who are knowingly poisoning people.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. Jeff Collin, give him a big hand for giving us the real story. Like you said, the narrative is always different from the reality, and that's why we have things here at Ground Zero Lounge. We bring people like Jeff to the show to give you the facts. We definitely deal in a lot of facts here at the Ground Zero Lounge. Some of them are very uncomfortable for people because they don't necessarily gel, like you said, with the narrative. If CNN says one thing, if MSNBC says another thing, and we say something different, we start seeing a clash of information. It all depends on where you want to get your information. We have given you some very, very, very good information tonight about what you're going to be seeing and what you are seeing. What you see is you see salmonella content, melamine content, you hear about all these things, and also about the schooling program and the meat programs. The meat programs, he said, it came out a certain way because that's what the media wanted you to know. They didn't want you to know the truth. They didn't want you to know that there was some safety handlers involved. But see, they don't want you to know, too, that there are these isolated incidents and all these people, like what happened with the PETA Corporation, where criminal negligence is going on and collusion is going on to keep it quiet. Go ahead.
Can
you hear me? Yeah.
Just
a point.
The 1992
Rio Earth Summit is where they listed all sustainable development syllabus. And among the other things, in that syllabus, there's no threat from Hoof Animals.
No clue of Hoof Animals?
No clue of Hoof Animals. Right. I didn't know that. So it's the idea that they want to eliminate clue of Hoof Animals?
Yeah.
Is that why we had the culling of all those animals during the foot and mouth diseases?
Right.
Interesting.
Most of the things on that list are actually happening now.
Sure. Problem, reaction, solution. The Hegelian dialectic, it's all part of this. You can right now take this to heart, that we are going to be hearing more stories about food, about the handling, the mishandling, and the way it's not going to reach you. The way store shelves are going to be empty. I don't know if it's going to be as drastic as I tend to make it, but I mean, I've heard stories from people of how bad it can get. Sure, meat supplies are safe because they take the time to be safe. Some get through the cracks. However, as we've discussed, Jeff and I, you know, you can eat 1 in 25,000 raw eggs and get salmonella poisoning. That's how, you know, if you decide you're going to take the chance of eating your eggs raw or over easy, you can still get salmonella poisoning if they're not cooked correctly. Alex, go ahead.
And super briefly, it's also about the feed as well, the feed quality. You were talking about Monsanto, and you've talked many times about genetically modified food and what it does to the human body. Think about the stuff that the cows are eating, that we are eating, and it's an even lower grade of GMO food. So all the stuff has an effect.
Piece of that is the whole issue with the feedlot type of agriculture, where you're putting all the grain content into the latter part of the animal cycle. There's a lot of conjecture that may be part of why we see the 105H7 bacteria being more common now than the ISCA.
So it's bad planning on the part of the compartmentalized farms, right? So we're looking at the way the farms are all they're feeding incorrectly.
Often, yeah.
Often, okay, go ahead.
Have you seen any information about the levels of arsenic in the runoff at the chicken slaughter plants? Because I had a friend at Johns Hopkins University who had a thesis on it.
I haven't seen that data. Wouldn't be surprised. Heavy metals can come from all
eons ago, I used to do environmental heavy metals. That's a long time. But a lot of that stuff accumulates in very strange places and can pop up. So it could very well happen depending upon the process.
Is there any other questions quickly? We've got, we're running out of time. We just want to wrap up. But we really, really are very happy to have Jeff. Okay, we got one more coming up. Good. Okay. Here we go. Another question. Go ahead.
Well, actually, I was just wondering why you're avoiding the real topic this week, but I mean, you haven't mentioned once anything about Michelle Obama's sleevelessness.
Oh, yeah. Forgot all about that. I don't know. Well, and I also forgot to talk, you know, about the Brad Pitt and, you know, Christina. Yeah, a lot of stuff going on, and I'm missing out on all the cool stuff, right? I don't watch enough TV. I'm just busily trying to prepare this stuff. Once again, I'd like to thank Jeff Crowley. Give him a big round of applause for being here tonight. I'd like to thank Bill Simmons for videotaping this for Google, sending it out to the entire world. Thank you so much for that, because they need to know the truth about food and the food safety and food that's going on, going out to you. Melamine, food, infant food, some of your lettuce, percolate, these types of things are real issues that they're not talking about. Yes, we talk about sleeveless Michelle Obama, but here we're talking about the truth and the facts, and we're very grateful that we're here at Dante's, and Frank provides this. Give Frank a round of applause for providing this bar for us. And also, for those of you who come tonight for Karaoke from Hell's coming up, but also, happy birthday to Jen Lang from Barfly Magazine. It's her birthday tonight. So, once again, we'd like to congratulate Rick Emerson doing this Thursday at KUFO. Good night, everybody, from the Ground Zero Lounge. I'm Clyde Lewis, and Karaoke from Hell is up next. Thank you so much for being here tonight.